Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
That's it. That's a wrap. The 2020-21 Premier League season is over, bringing to an end the strangest and what has felt like the longest football season in history. In a season that started with major, major uncertainty, we've ended with some real positivity. Fans back in stadiums and some absolutely iconic moments to remember from the last 12 months. And here on the final show of the season, the Football Social Daily team is taking you through every major story from what's been a thrilling final day to the campaign. The race for Europe, that's where we get ourselves kicked off in part one, as it was heartbreak for FA Cup winners Leicester. They dropped out of the top four, with Liverpool and Chelsea edging them in the race for the Champions League. The Foxes now drop themselves down into the Europa League. They join West Ham next season in Europe's B competition, and it's Tottenham who are heading off into the great unknown in what is definitely Europe's C competition, the Europa Conference League, whatever that will be. And then in part two, let's face it, it's all about one man, Sergio Aguero. The Argentinian has signed off from English football with two goals as Manchester City absolutely battered Everton 5-0 on what was an emotional final day at the Etihad Stadium. Plus, we're going to be looking back at some eye-catching final day wins for Newcastle, Arsenal and Leeds. So an absolute truckload of things to get through on tonight's show. My name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me we have the Stretford Paddock's finest, Jay Motti. Jay, how are you feeling?
I'm good, man. I'm just basking in the glory of an undefeated away record this season, which for me is as good as winning the league. if not a bit better.
Do you know what? Get that sentence trademarked. And we also have Manchester United fan and freelance broadcast journalist Matt Cunningham joining us. Matt, are you as confident as Jay as a United fan at the end of the season?
I echo his thoughts entirely. Unbeaten away record for a season is much better than a league title, I think.
Right, exactly. I think that just shows how polite Matt is, that he refuses to disagree with Jay's wild statement. Right. Big game down at the King Power Stadium. Ultimately, as I said at the start, heartbreak for Leicester. Matt, we're going to go to you first on this. Ahead of the final day, there was two spots still up for grabs in the top four. Liverpool, Chelsea and Leicester all vying to get themselves into the Champions League. And unfortunately, it's the Foxes who've come up short. Jamie Vardy, as expected, when Leicester needed him, stood up to be counted. Two goals, two penalties to keep Leicester in the game. But ultimately, it just wasn't enough. Harry Kane, two for Gareth Bale, and an absolute horror show from Kasper Schmeichel means that Brendan Rodgers will be in the Europa League next season. You look at the situation, Matt, on the final day, and there's always so much pressure, and you're running around trying to keep an eye on all the different results. And naturally, the Leicester players will have had things filtering through to them about what was going on with their rivals. But ultimately, you just get the sense that in the last month, maybe the last 2 months, they've taken their eye off the ball in the Premier League.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I find it hard to criticise Leicester. I don't know if it's because they are part of that top six, really, but I don't see them in that way. They're not part of the big six, for instance. So I find it hard to criticise them, but they really have bottled it, if you think about it, massively. I read just after the game They spent 242 days in the top four this season. And they're a team that have missed out. They were the ones that I most wanted to get in the top four. I think it was the most interesting story between them and West Ham. That's what I was rooting for. But I think they have bottled it massively. They don't have the same budget as Chelsea or Liverpool by any means. But when you look at how poor Liverpool were for stretches of the season, to still finish behind Liverpool and Leicester have been... There was an air of consistency about them for the majority of the season. But as you say, the last month, maybe 2 months, they've just slipped. I think one win in their last five in the league it's never going to get you the job done in the Premier League if you want to finish in the top four, because there's so much competition for those places. So I'm torn between, it's tough to criticise them because they overexceed, in my opinion, every year anyway. But then if you do 242 days, it's nearly the entire season. I don't know how long a season is in days, but you're budgeting on the entire season and miss out on the last day, similarly to last season, when United beat them on the last day. That's bottling it really, isn't it? So, I'm 6-1 after the Ulfberg.
Jay, when you look at the situation with Leicester, as Matt rightly says, you look at the amount of time that they've spent in the top four, not just this season, but it's deja vu from last season when United edged them out on the final day. And supporters, they'll be frustrated. We chatted about this after they won the FA Cup, in this idea of, are Leicester big enough as a team or as a club to have the best of both worlds? Because in reality, they should be pairing that FA Cup win with a top four place. They deserve it, in quotes, more than Liverpool and Chelsea. Liverpool haven't been great for the majority of this season. They've clicked into a bit of end of season form. And Chelsea have been much better under Thomas Tuchel. But in reality, in the build-up to the Champions League final, they've not been great. But Leicester have had chances to just sign it off, just get the box ticked, and they haven't been able to do it. And the Premier League is absolutely cutthroat. And as Matt said, it's difficult to have sympathy for them when everybody could see what was going to happen if they didn't get it done.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird. And I think it goes down. So Leicester have sort of... They've always had a sort of a smallish pool of players that they can rely on, but a high-quality pool of players. I mean, if you go back to the title win, when they won the title in 2016, was it, they had... You know, they basically had 12 players, 12 or 13 players that they used, and that was it. And yet they kept injury free. They didn't have any distractions in Europe or anything, and they were able to do it. Last season, when they started picking up these injuries, it affected them. They weren't able to cope. I think they had one or two players that were out. I think losing Maddison was a big loss for them, and they just couldn't cope. And then I think they lost something like four of the last 10 games, whatever it was, and including that, obviously, the final day. This season, I don't think necessarily it's mainly injuries. I think it might just be the games catching up with them. Because obviously they had the FA Cup run and the FA Cup final, and then they've gone into this sort of this last few games as well, haven't quite looked themselves. They got a couple of good results. I mean, obviously they beat us at Old Trafford, beat United at Old Trafford, but they've tailed off, and I feel like it's that thing of not having that squad, and if one or two players are injured, and I know they've had injuries this season, lost Harvey Barnes, of course, who was a great player for them, lost James Justin as well, who was playing really well. But it just feels like when you take one or two players out, when the games catch up with you, they are over-reliant on certain players. And if those players don't step up, then they haven't got the squad that, you know, some of the other clubs have, even like a Liverpool have. Liverpool have got, obviously, they don't like to talk about it, Liverpool, but they've had some injuries. But they have got a squad to call upon. And those squad players and the rest of the players that have come back from injury and all the rest of it have stepped up this at the end of the season. Leicester don't have that. And it's just those fine margins. And it is heartbreaking. And maybe some people look in and go, is it Brendan Rodgers? He has these end-of-season problems where his teams always in the Premier League seem to sort of have a little bit of a mini-collapse. I'm not so sure. But I just think they haven't got the squad. When the games catch up with them, when injuries catch up with them, they can cope with it.
Looking at Spurs, Matt, in terms of how they're going to end up at the end of the season, and they've got this seventh place, and it could potentially be a bit of a poison chalice, because we don't know how this new Europa Conference League is going to pan out, whether it'll be a success, whether it'll be a route into the Europa League and the Champions League for some of the teams that are going to go into it. But from a Premier League perspective, it's become a bit of a laughing stock, and a lot of teams have thrown it around amongst themselves in the last few weeks. I know as an Arsenal fan, I didn't want Arsenal to be in it, and I'm actually delighted that Tottenham have ended up in it. But they will phrase this as a positive, because all the negativity about Jose Mourinho and then eventually him leaving the club, the season has ended on a bit of a high. Ryan Mason's got a bit of positivity back into them, and Gareth Bale, 2 goals in the final game of the season, has finally shown what Tottenham brought him back to the club for.
Yeah, well, I mean, with regards to this European conference, the third tier of European football, really. I agree with you. I think they'd have wanted to avoid it, really. Having said that, they played really well against Leicester. It's a good win, so maybe not, but it's an unusual one. I can't see Spurs being particularly excited about being in that competition. It's not, we don't know what to expect, I suppose, but what's the level of quality in competition going to be in a tournament like that? The Europa League is already sort of dwindling in quality, in my opinion. So the third tier, I don't have much hopes for that. It just looks like more games for them to play, which will affect them next season. I think their season as a whole finished seventh is poor by Spurs' standards, but it's the Mourinho effect. It's when the wheels start to fall off with Jose, that tends to be how things go. You know, it starts to get pretty bad pretty quickly, and it's really the pattern of his career. So, as you said, Ryan Mason came in at the end, didn't have a great record, you know, won some, lost some, but it felt a bit more positive, and I'm happy for Ryan Mason that he's got himself into a managerial position and he's starting his career in that sense. So Spurs, I think they've had a poor season by all accounts, probably the worst in a long time, and I'm not sure they'll be thrilled about this competition either.
Moving on to Liverpool, Jay, they've clinched third place on the final day. And when, again, we look at this idea of evaluating seasons and progress and how things have happened, and obviously you do like a bit of needle with Liverpool and the injuries, or the injuries that they haven't mentioned, shall we say. But given where Liverpool were at the turn of 2021 and then that dreadful run at Anfield where they just couldn't win a game, it looked as if they were going to drop out of the European question completely, let alone the Champions League. But they've got it together in the last month, and five wins in a row has seen them into the Champions League and actually leapfrog Chelsea. So, again, we talk about this idea of positive ends to the season. Liverpool, considering where they were in February, where it looked as if they were going to have one of the worst ever title defences, have ended the season well, and be nice.
No, listen, even I can't, you know, change the narrative here. They have ended the season well, and it looked at one point like they had pretty much no chance of getting into the Champions League. So to finish third in that context is very impressive. The sort of the reason I as a United fan, I've taken the mickey somewhat slightly out of Liverpool is because this time last year we were hearing how this was the greatest ever Premier League team and how this Premier League team was going to retain the title easily and conquer Europe again and all this other sort of nonsense. And then they spent most of the season sort of kicking around 8th or 9th in the table or whatever. But towards the end of the season, they've done what they needed to do, and they've still got quality. If you look at that team that faced Crystal Palace today, you know, they've got quality all over it. That sort of front six is a very strong sort of front six. I think they will miss Wijnaldum. I know he's on his way out. He's going. But like I said earlier, I was taking the mick a little bit. But they have obviously got these players to come back from injury. Virgil van Dijk's going to make a massive difference. And if I'm being honest, one of the things that irks me the most about Liverpool getting into the Champions League is the fact that when they're in it, you always feel like they've got a chance in that competition. So that's why I'd rather they weren't in it, to be honest with you. But yeah, they've completely turned it around. They've had a great run. And it really pains me to say that, but yeah, they're back in the Champions League and hopefully they won't do any damage in it.
Obviously, as Jay said, Matt signed off the season with a 2-0 win at home to Crystal Palace, two goals for Sadio Mane, who's had a fairly mixed campaign. Mo Salah has still been solid in terms of getting goals. He's got over 20 again for the fourth straight season for Liverpool, but you do get the sense that on the back of winning the league and then this season really falling way short of expectations, that Klopp is going to make some sort of a change this summer. Van Dijk and Gomez will obviously come back in following their injuries, but there's this growing idea that Mane, Salah, one of them has to go or will go. Do you think in order to kind of get them back on track, Klopp does need a bit of a shock to the system, and maybe that could be getting rid of one of his big names?
I mean, maybe. I don't think they'll do anything drastic because as the narrative is, and it is true, injuries ruin their season. Similarly with Wolves, injuries ruin their season, truly. Like, you look at the end of the season, they've improved massively. They're still the same side. They just missed some really key players. If you lose your two best centre-halves, your three best centre-halves, really, because Matip missed a long period of time as well, as Gomez and Van Dijk. They've played, every time you look, they've got a bunch of kids in the back line. It's difficult to play, especially in the Premier League. You've got a lot of good forwards. It's tough. So I don't think they'll do anything too drastic. Maybe they do. Maybe they do get rid of one of them because they signed Jota and he did so well. And they'll trust Klopp with money. He does do well. He signs good players. You can't really knock him in that regard. The players he brings in, he gets much more out of them than you expect. Like with Jota, he looked like sort of a middle-of-the-road type player at Wolves, and he turns up at Liverpool and couldn't stop scoring. If it wasn't for an injury that kept him out for, whatever, 2-3 months, something like that, he would have had plenty of goals this season. So maybe they do something drastic. Maybe Mane or Salah does go if they have their eye on another club or something like that. But I think there'll be mostly the same team next season, one or two acquisitions to try and patch up some holes. And then once they get players back from injury, they'll unfortunately be the same team and be a good side again next year, most likely.
Before we move on to Chelsea, the other team that clinched the Champions League place on the last day, Jay, Crystal Palace obviously defeat at Anfield on the final day of the campaign. Roy Hodgson's last game at the club. He said he's not going to extend his contract. No confirmation yet on whether he's going to retire, but massive season ahead for Palace. We've touched on this quite a few times, of the fact that Hodgson leaving is a big factor. They've got a long list of players who are out of contract. All the ingredients for me seem to be in place for, unless they get this absolutely right ahead of next season, they could go down.
Yeah, and it's weird. I mean, me and you've spoken about Crystal Palace so many times over the last couple of years, and there's been times when I've thought, oh, this is it, you know, when they've had a couple of bad results, and I've thought, I can see them sort of getting sucked into it now, and I can see them getting relegated or getting dragged into a relegation dogfight, and they're sort of over-reliant on one or two players, and, you know, Zaha doesn't turn up in particular, sometimes they'll struggle. And you always felt that the sort of the saving grace there was Roy Hodgson, all his experience, all his sort of tactical analysis, everything he's got there. He's sort of been able to manage that team and manage it really well. I think he probably doesn't get the credit he deserves, because it's easy to look at it and go, where are Crystal Palace? What, are they 14th? Well, that's nothing to shout about. But when you look at the resources they've got and the fact that they've always been pretty much safe from relegation, then I think he does probably deserve a little bit of credit. They had some good results, beat us at Old Trafford early in the season, the second time they've done that in two seasons as well. But I think it's going to be a massive task for whoever comes in there. We saw it happen when was it De Boer?
That was a disaster.
Six games, yeah, just a complete disaster. If you don't get it right there, it can go horribly wrong very quickly. Like you said, they've got players that are out of contract. I do feel that they are over-reliant on one or two players. I think Hodgson got the best out of that team. I do. I don't think that many other managers could have got anything better out of it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I think there'll be an element of just hoping from some Crystal Palace fans that, you know, there's just basically three worse teams in the next season. But we'll have to wait and see.
Looking at Chelsea, Matt, a little bit of luck in their favour. If the luck wasn't going for Leicester, it was definitely going for Chelsea. They lost 2-1 on a final day away at Aston Villa, but based on the back of Leicester's defeat to Tottenham, that means that Thomas Tuchel's side do clinch a top four position and they will be playing Champions League football next season. But much like Manchester City, who we'll get on into the second part of the show, all of their last couple of weeks has been geared towards the Champions League final, and striking that balance between not knackering the players and making sure that they're not undercooked is difficult. Man City haven't found it easy, and Chelsea definitely haven't. They've only won once in the last four games in all competitions, obviously lost the FA Cup final against Leicester, and they were poor again today. They gave it a bit of a bash in the second half, but Aston Villa, let's be realistic about this, a fairly average Premier League team. They had nothing left to play for on the last day of the season. And Chelsea, if it had gone the other way for Leicester, could be staring down the barrel of bowing out of the Champions League.
Yeah, well, I think obviously it wasn't their intention, but their priorities also in the back of their mind on Saturday. And should they, if, let's say they finished fifth, but should they win on Saturday, they'd still be in the Champions League anyway. So there was two routes into it for them. I think they've struggled at the end of the season. I think a lot of teams haven't. The league sort of got a bit distorted in terms of where teams have finished and how close some teams are to other teams. I mean, if you look at Liverpool and United, I think they finished 5 points behind United. But for the majority of the season, Manchester United were a far better side. So the league got a bit distorted at the end. I think that's partially what happened to Chelsea as well, is that they were probably a top four level side, especially once Tuchel came in. It was a really good appointment that saved their season, really. I think they played really well. They've looked like a good side, and they deserve to be in the top four on the basis of the whole season. However, similarly with City, I think similarly with United as well, because they've been sort of secure for a while. And Chelsea, with their focuses on two finals, they've just slipped, and their performances have got a bit worse towards the end, dropped a lot of points that they maybe shouldn't have done. Lost the FA Cup final, which, I mean, I was happy about. It was nice to see Leicester pick up a trophy. But I guess, like I say, they're focused on Saturday. They're trying to beat City on Saturday. When you're fourth, fifth, third, but you're in a Champions League final, that doesn't really matter. They're not bothered about that, I don't think. If you said to them, well, you can finish fifth place rather than fourth like you did today, but you'll win on Saturday, they'd take that over fourth and lose on Saturday any day. So I think that's all that there is to that.
I think the key word there, Matt, is deserved. And Jay, when you look at the end of the season, the table generally doesn't lie. 38 games does tend to kind of shake everyone down, and everyone falls where they're expected to. But Leicester, you look on balance, you know, the stat that Matt said at the start of how few time they've spent outside the top four this season and last season. Leicester deserve to be in the top four, but they're not. Liverpool arguably don't. Chelsea, based on the first half of the season, don't. Do you think the way it's shaken down at the end of the season, which is Liverpool and Chelsea playing there, do they deserve to be in the Champions League? Or does it even really matter? Because ultimately football is so brutal that if you don't do it right up until the last kick on the last day, you're going to fall short.
I think, like, going back to Liverpool, and you know me in Liverpool, I will never give them credit unless I have to. You have to give a team credit, I think, when they're so far off and they need to put together an amazing run, and they do it. Because, you know, that's not easy. And it was like, you know, Liverpool came to Old Trafford, what was it, 2 weeks ago, a week ago? And it looked like they were out of it. It was like, you know, they've got to basically more or less win the next four games. But they did that. Leicester as well. Yes, they spent lots of time at the top of the Premier League, top three or four of the Premier League. But that ultimately doesn't mean anything if you finish outside the top four, which is what they've done again. And you think that maybe there'd be an element of learning from that and thinking, okay, you know what happened last season, this is why we have to learn from that, you know, sort of take that into this season and take that into these final sort of stages of the season and make sure we don't let it happen again. And they have done that. And it's like, yes, you can say, oh, well, they've been unlucky, and I mentioned earlier they've had injuries or whatever, the games have caught up with them. But ultimately, I know it's a cliche, Fergal, you have to get your cliche bell out, but I don't think the table does lie. And I think if you are in the top four or you're out of the top four, then that's on merit. You know, West Ham have basically finished 1 point behind Leicester. And yet, the thing with West Ham is you'd say, well, actually, they've done well because no one expected them to get to sixth. I think at the beginning of the season, everyone was saying West Ham might be a team that are struggling to stay up. And yet, they've had a sort of dalliance with the Champions League and comfortably finished in the top six. Whereas Leicester, because they started so well, because they were doing so well, because they were in the top three or four most of the season, it's a different narrative. But I think ultimately you end up where you deserve to end up, no matter how harsh that may seem.
Matt, would you agree with that? Liverpool, Chelsea have just kind of shown that little bit of mettle at the key time where Leicester have fallen short. And Leicester didn't lose their top four place because they've lost to Tottenham on the last day. They've lost it because of draw against Southampton, defeat at home to Newcastle. And ultimately, if you're not in the running right at the end of it, you are going to get pushed out. And this is a little bit of an almost playground situation where the big boys have come in right at the end and just bullied Leicester out of it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I think it comes down to having the nerve and sort of the confidence. And Chelsea are used to being in the top four. That's where they always are, in the top four. Leicester, not so much. It probably feels like a big deal. Tensions rise in the dressing room. You get a bit anxious, a bit nervous. Okay, we've got some big games coming up. We've got to, you know, play United. We've got to play them, whatever, and win a few games. It gets difficult. It sounds bizarre to say, because I don't know that for a fact, obviously, they're professional football players, but it does feel like that. Leicester have done that twice in two seasons now. Chelsea have snuck in. Last season it was United that snuck in. So I think it's just confidence and that sort of feeling of belonging. They've got a good squad. Like I said, Tuchel did a really good job once he came in. So from the moment he was appointed, I think Lampard never really worked out at Chelsea to me. I didn't see the future or the way they were playing. It never really felt right. It felt like maybe a forced, because he's a club legend and they love him and so on and so forth. A forced appointment. Then Tuchel came in and you saw immediately, like, oh, yeah, this looks like a proper team again. Suddenly, the big name players that they've got feel like big name players, and the starting 11 look stronger again all of a sudden. But I think that's about right. Similarly with Spurs, for instance, they on the brink of winning a trophy, they get to a final. Suddenly, the nerves start kicking. You start to panic. Oh, I have to sack the manager quick. You've got a manager there who's won plenty of trophies. He's not worried about an FA Cup final. You sack him quickly and appoint Ryan Mason. Like I said before, I'm happy for Mason, but it doesn't make sense, does it? You sack Mourinho a couple of days before a final to appoint Ryan Mason. It's bizarre. So I think at football at that level, with this kind of money and pressure involved, nerves kicking and things start falling apart or things start coming together at the final moments.
So we now know the top four is finishing as Manchester City champions, Manchester United in second, Liverpool third and Chelsea fourth. Leicester drop down to fifth, which means they do make the Europa League. Tottenham, as we mentioned, are into the Europa Conference League. That just leaves sixth place. Jay, West Ham, you touched on them a second ago, but in terms of success stories from this season. There's an argument to say that West Ham have had the best season in the Premier League based on expectations, because the top four have essentially hit par for where they would expect to be. Leicester, you would expect them to be in and around the Europa League race. Tottenham have probably fallen short. Arsenal, Everton have definitely fallen short. But West Ham at the start of the season, with all due respect, will have had designs on mid-table. They've massively exceeded that. And now they're going back into European competition for the first time in a long time.
Absolutely, and I think West Ham has been the sort of the real surprise story for me this season. You know, you've mentioned it all there. How many people thought they'd be six or challenging for the Champions League place? I mean, they only end up finishing what, two points off the Champions League, which a few months ago would have just seemed sort of impossible. So you know, to finish sixth, I think for them comfortably and above the likes of Tottenham and Arsenal, is impressive. And even the likes of, you know, Everton, who were flying high at one point. So I think it's been a real sort of success story relative terms for West Ham. You look at someone like Jesse Lingard, who has been a revelation at West Ham. He really has. He's just been absolutely on fire. Went there on the back of what was, as a United fan, I can speak from sort of someone who loves Jesse Lingard, but it was about 18 months of just completely underperforming. His form had fallen off a cliff. He'd gone from an England regular and a United regular to barely making United's bench at times. And it was just sad to see, and I didn't like seeing it as someone who's very fond of him. But he went there, banged in the goals. West Ham have some other good players as well. Suchek, I've been impressed with. Obviously, the golden boy, Declan Rice as well, who everyone's sort of sniffing around. He's had a great season. So it's been a success story. It's been one of those as well, maybe a little bit of a sort of redemption narrative. David Moyes is always someone who's been a sort of laughingstock to many people. He's had a good season. Jesse Lingard, maybe many people have given up on him. He's had a good season. It just remains to be seen what happens with West Ham now. Do they get Lingard back? Do they keep hold of Declan Rice? Do they build on this? Or is next season another one of sort of kicking around in mid-table and sort of going back to type?
Matt, as Jay mentions, it is going to be a big summer for West Ham in terms of preparing for the Europa League and some big decisions to be made in the transfer market, both incomings and outgoings. David Moyes will be given a budget to work with, but it won't be the same as the teams around him. Obviously, the top four, Leicester will have more money than him. Whoever is in charge of Tottenham will have more money than him. But what's the priority for Moyes moving into the summer? Is it bringing in more players, or is it holding on to a Declan Rice or potentially a Suchek if someone comes sniffing around him, or Mikel Antonio could attract attention after what's been a brilliant season for him up front?
It's a mixture of both. I think ultimately West Ham aren't going to really decide the future of their players. For someone like Declan Rice, if a top team comes along, he'll probably want to move on because of his age. He wants to play at a big club. It's a big opportunity. It'll be a big transfer fee. I think he'll just choose to move on, whether that's someone like United, Chelsea, whoever it may be. However, you can bring in players. So, for instance, Jesse Lingard, as Jay just mentioned, gone there, done great. I know you had him this season, it won't feel like an addition, but if they can get him on a permanent deal, that's a massive, massive thing for West Ham. He's a good player for them, and they've been recruiting quite well as of recent. And I don't want to mention West Ham without saying how good Moyes has done. If you think about when he took over, was it last season? It was like, yeah, Christmas last season, wasn't it? And the club are like just outside of the relegation zone, to the next season putting them in Europe. You know, as Jay said, he's a laughingstock a bit, Moyes, and you know, people take the mick out of him a little bit, but that's a serious job. And in the middle of that, he had COVID. He was managing on Zoom at one point, you know, and he still managed to do that. So fair play to Moyes. I hope they do manage to recruit well in the summer, and they don't lose too many players, because they got some talent in there that people will have some of that clubs will have their eyes on, you know, Declan Rice being the main one. Then again, you sell Declan Rice, you get a good fee for him. The rumoured fees talking about Declan Rice are mad, you know, like 60, 70, 80 million. If you can reinvest that well and keep the pieces around him the same, they might still be able to be there next season. But it's a big ask to go from relegation to where they are this season to then trying to consolidate next season is a big ask. So you just have to wait and see for West Ham.
Yeah, I agree. I think, however the summer shakes up, is going to be massive for West Ham. Hopefully they can keep hold of some of their key players and make a real splash in Europe. Right, that's the race for Europe all sorted. We are going to take a quick break here on the Football Social Daily. After the break, we're going to be talking about Mr. Aguero. Sergio Aguero has signed off from English football, and in true Aguero style, he has done it in brilliant fashion. We're going to be talking about that and all the rest of the final day Premier League action in just a second. Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily Premier League Final Day Review Special. What a fantastic end to an incredible Premier League season. We've already talked about the race for Europe and we now know who will be playing in the Europa League, Champions League and the Europa Conference League next season. The other big story from the final day of the season focused on the Etihad Stadium. Sergio Aguero has brought down the curtain on his Premier League career and he's done it in incredible style. Two goals off the bench as City battered Everton 5-0 and Aguero has now become the highest ever Premier League goalscorer for one club. 184 Premier League goals for Manchester City and it seems apt. In fact, it seems perfect that we go to Jay first on this one because whose record did he break, Jay?
Do you know what, right? I'm not just saying this. I didn't even know about this till today. I found this out when he broke it, obviously, Wayne Rooney's record. And it was like, oh, he's broke Wayne Rooney's record for the most.
Do you expect me to believe this?
Honestly, mate.
Hold on. The good people listening to the podcast, do you expect them to believe this, Jay? Come on, you're an honest soul. Come on.
Listen, I am an honest soul. I take my L's, mate. Believe me, I've taken my medicine when it comes to Manchester City. But I wasn't aware that it was Wayne Rooney who had the record for the most Premier League goals for one club. Obviously, he's not got it anymore. Sergio Aguero's got it, but I'm not going to get too pent up about the fact that, you know, a record I didn't even know we had or that Rooney had is now gone. I'm sick of the sight of Sergio Aguero. I'm kind of glad to see the back of him. He's obviously given me some horrible moments, probably the worst moment I've had as a Manchester United fan. But I have to hold my hands up and say he's a phenomenal player, phenomenal talent. His goal scoring record speaks for itself. And you just can't deny that. And my only hope now is that he doesn't go out on a complete high by lifting the Champions League. Because while I'm no Chelsea fan, it is preferable to City winning it because I don't have to see Chelsea fans every day when I'm out in town.
Matt, Jay has been kind of kind in his praise, shall we say, for Aguero. And obviously, he leaves the Premier League as an absolute legend, not just in terms of his goals, but the impact that he's had on this City team that have been so successful, not just under Pep Guardiola, but across the last decade. And when you measure him against Rooney or other Premier League strikers, he is in that bracket. But I think what's actually quite amazing about him in terms of this moment, he was involved in probably the most iconic Premier League moment. And football rarely gives these fairy tale situations. The Premier League sometimes can be fantastic, but most of the time it's pretty spit and sawdust and just kind of nil-nils that we're just forced to watch. But these types of moments do inject a bit of magic back into it.
Yeah, they do, and you know, he goes out today with, as Jay said, that record. I was the same. I didn't know until they said it that was
two liars.
Yeah, I do actually believe him because I didn't know it either that Rooney had that record. And Jay might bite me off for this, but I think he goes down as probably the best goal scorer ever in Premier League history. I don't know if I can find a way to argue that point is because while Wayne Rooney's a better footballer and Thierry Henry's a better footballer. His goals to games and goals to minutes ratio and things like that, and the goals that he scores, every type of goal, is I don't think there's a better goal scorer, pure goal scorer in Premier League history than Sergio Aguero. As for the, obviously you mentioned that iconic moment, of course, he'll go down in history, he'll be remembered for that as well. Just an unbelievable signing. The 30 million at the time felt like a lot of money when they signed him, and now it feels like peanuts for a guy of his quality. And picks up a record on the final day, kind of feels fitting of the kind of player that he was.
I've got to throw in one here. Sorry, Matt. And I don't need to dig around on Wikipedia to say that Andy Cole needs more respect, man. He's for me the greatest goal scorer. He didn't even take penalties, Andy Cole. How many of the rest of them can say that? I think he's still above Aguero in goals, but no, he has. You're right. He has been phenomenal, but yeah. I'm a massive Andy Cole fan, mate. I think he's the one that always gets overlooked.
Yeah, shout out to Andy Cole. Manchester City legend, Andy Cole, let's not forget.
Fair point, yeah.
Looking at the Champions League final, Jay, obviously Chelsea we've touched on, they got a little bit of luck to qualify for the top four. City are in a similar situation where Guardiola's been trying to balance this idea of making sure the players are fresh for the final, but that they're not over demanded in terms of the Premier League running. And this as a way to wrap up the season, 5-0, they've absolutely blitzed Everton. It's an ideal preparation in the sense of that the confidence will be flowing, but there's also this idea that this was a very end of season game. It was almost like a friendly in the second half. And whilst the Aguero story is great and people will kind of bask in that, particularly City fans are absolutely delighted for him, but you have to maintain a professional edge. And when there's always this gap between the end of the season and then a big final, it can be difficult to keep the focus right on that. And Guardiola's got a big week ahead of him because he almost needs to shut down the Aguero party on Monday morning and say, guys, we've got the biggest game in the club's history this weekend. Now we need to refocus.
Yeah, and I don't think he'll have too much drama doing that, to be honest with you. I think that, you know, the players they've got and the fact that this is City's first chance of winning the Champions League, Guardiola's first chance of winning it in, what, 11 years, is it? Or something like that, 10 years. I think they'll be focused. I think that they'll be right at it. And I think the fact it's Chelsea as well will give City a bit of an edge, because you're looking at, you're thinking, OK, this is a team that, yes, they've beaten us a couple of times, but finished well below us in the league table in terms of points. We haven't really got, you know, it's not like you think, look at them and think, oh, we've got a lot to fear here. This isn't a team that you'd say was better than Manchester City. Manchester City have the best 11 out of the two teams. So I think they'll be able to focus them. I think they'll go about it in a professional way. And I think they'll be feeling pretty confident as well because of the reasons I've mentioned. So yeah, whilst you don't want to party too hard, I don't think they will. I think they'll be like, listen, we need to sort of focus on what we've got to do, get the trophy won, and then we can have a sort of Champions League winning Sergio Aguero departing joint party, and I can go and find a cave to hide in somewhere.
If anyone's got any caves on offer in Manchester, drop Jay a line, drop him an email. Appreciate catch it. Him on Twitter. He'd be massively grateful. Looking at Everton, Matt, again, another team that's massively underachieved based on the start of the season and their objectives. Carlo Ancelotti gave a really interesting interview last week where he basically said, if there's certain players that don't want to be at Everton Football Club or they're not buying into what I'm trying to do and the direction I'm taking the club in, they can leave. And he actually said they can leave for free. I'm not even interested in getting money for them. And when you look at the situation, yeah, league positions, they finished 10th. That's an improvement on last season, which was 12th. But obviously Ancelotti was only in for a portion of that. They don't seem to be moving in the right direction. In fact, they're in danger of going backwards because ultimately Everton's undoing is always their inconsistency. And despite some of the talent they've got in the team and the fact that they've got a regular goal scorer now in Dominic Calvert-Lewin, they always seem to be quite a bit short.
Yeah, they do. With regards to the sort of the players can leave for free if they're not in for it, I'm not sure the owner is it. Machiri, is he called? I'm not sure he's happy with him offering the players away for free.
You're a brave man to argue with Ancelotti. He gives you that eyebrow and you just say, yeah, sound.
Yeah, I mean it's a good point, but I think Everton, great start to the season, but the Premier League is a difficult competition. That's why we speak so highly of West Ham, because West Ham continue to do it. If you ask me who do I think has got a better squad, Everton or West Ham, I think Everton by far have got a better squad. And again, injuries was a thing for them. They lost quite a few players for a period of time. And the same can be said for a lot of teams, I suppose. But to fall off in the way they did in the second half of the season was really poor and unexpected from an Ancelotti team. You know, a manager who he's just got it all. He knows what he's doing, obviously. He's been around and won everything. So you don't really expect that kind of collapse to happen under his watch. So that's probably why he's so angry. That's probably why he's come out and said players can leave for free. I doubt he means it. He's going to need them next season if he's still there. But they fell off in sort of a colossal way at the second half of the season. I think they were more than capable of being in a European position. I think Champions League was always a stretch. Similarly for West Ham, was always a stretch when you look at sort of how good some of those top few sides in the Premier League are and how strong the squads are. It was always a difficult ask, but Europa League or this third tier competition was a possibility for Everton, and they've missed out massively with sort of a poor end and inconsistencies, like you said.
Working our way down the table, 8th place Arsenal. I can say, I don't care what anybody says, sour grapes or whatever, I am delighted with 8th place, because I do not and did not want to be playing in the Europa Conference League. I honestly think, based on the way the tournament is being set up, Jay, I do prefer to be out of Europe. I think Arsenal blew their chances of getting into the actual Europa League a few weeks back, and then losing to Villarreal in the semi-final meant there was no backdoor route for them. Signed off with a positive 2-0 win at home to Brighton, but ultimately the question for Arsenal this summer is, where do the big changes get made? Arteta is under pressure, could potentially be removed, and there's a lot of players, for me, as an Arsenal fan, with an investment into it, that need to be moved on. Arsenal need major surgery this summer. What are they going to do?
Well, again, you know, without sort of stating the obvious, it's how much money have you got to spend? Do you know what I mean? It's like, have they got enough money to do some investment? I mean, there are some sort of positives for Arsenal. The lad who's on, is it, Smith Rowe, is it?
Emile Smith Rowe, yeah.
William Smith Rowe. The lad who's on at Newcastle as well, is it?
Joe Willock.
You know, these are good young players. Saka's obviously a good young player as well. Pepe looks like he might have started to be the player that they bought for all that money. So there's some positives, but there's also some question. I think Odegaard's going to... Is he going to go back to Real Madrid, is it? I don't think he's going to stick around. I know he's another youngster, but I'm not sure what's happening with him. Aubameyang, that's a big question mark. What is he, 31 now? Hasn't had a great season. That's a worry, because you always felt this season, well, you can rely on Aubameyang's goals, and that hasn't been the case. But also, they've had this sort of decent run towards the end of the season in terms of results, where I think you've won, is it a 5 on the spin or whatever it is?
Yeah.
You've won quite a lot of games, so you can take a positive from that. I just feel like there is a lot of work there to do. I'm not convinced with Granit Xhaka. I know he's been there a little while. I think defensively, Gabriel came in. Magalhães, he was someone that United were linked with. He's been okay. Holding's okay. Chambers is okay. I think Tierney's decent, but it's not a sort of a defence that really inspires me. And also Thomas Partey, who I was sort of jealous of when Arsenal got him, I don't think he's torn up any trees at all, to be honest with you. So if they've got money, then yes, they've got a sort of nucleus of young players there, like I mentioned, that could help them kick on. But they're going to have to spend. You finish eighth for a reason. You don't finish eighth because you're one of the best teams in the Premier League. You finish eighth because you're not good enough, basically, especially for Arsenal. This isn't like a West Ham or someone going, OK, that's all right. This is, you know, an Arsenal team that won the FA Cup last year and probably had aspirations of at least getting into the Champions League conversation this year. So to finish eighth is just not good enough. And they just need investment. I mean, you know, it is that simple. It really is, because there's a few players there that just aren't up to scratch, and I don't see them carrying Arsenal into the Champions League places next season. So you're going to have to spend money. And the sort of the downside to that is, unless the owners or whoever give you the money, because I know Arsenal have had a lot of issue with the owners, I don't know where it comes from, because I don't see any players, the many players where they could sell to bring in that money to reinvest, if that makes sense. I think it's going to be a difficult summer unless the owners get the chequebook out.
Obviously, Matt, as Jay mentions, the Kroenkes are going to remain in charge. There's obviously massive protests in the last few weeks over their ownership, but they're not going anywhere, certainly in the short term, and they will be under pressure to get the money out, get the chequebook out, as Jay said. But I think the big question comes back to Arteta. Do they believe in him enough to give him money? I'm not for one second defending the Kroenkes, because their running of the club has created this civil war within Arsenal fans. But ultimately, Arteta still looks like they don't have the full backing, because they will give him some money. Partey came in last season for a big fee from Atletico Madrid. But based on how poor Arsenal have been this season, that reduces Arteta's stock and his ability to say to the owners, listen, if you want me to get us where we want to be, I need money. When they can turn around and say, well, yes, but you've massively underachieved. And Arteta could be under pressure this summer, and he doesn't really seem to be under that much pressure during the season, but questions will be asked about his position before we kick a ball next season.
Yeah, I mean, I was just about to ask you the same question, to be honest with you, as an Arsenal fan. I mean, for me, as an outsider looking into Arsenal, they seem like a team that have fallen so far now that it's a long process. It's a long, long period before you can start comparing them to any of the top sides. I don't see them bouncing back. I don't see them making some huge investment that sort of propels them massively in one season. Yeah, as has been said, they won a few games towards the end of the season, then a strong end to the season in what was really sort of a collection of dead rubbers. I think that their fate was sort of determined, and they won a few games, which, you know, it's not bad. They did well towards the end, as Jay said, 5 in a row. But for you, as an Arsenal fan, does Arteta get to keep his job? Because to me, I don't see what's so special about Arteta, or why he's any more significant than another man that you can go out and get potentially. For instance, Everton brought in Ancelotti, I think would be much more fitting at Arsenal than Everton, and would be a much better option than Arteta.
You know what, it's a good point as well, Matt, because there was this sort of thing that when Arteta went into Arsenal, with no proof, people were just saying, well, because he's been with Pep, he's actually, you know, one of the reasons for City's success. And you think, well, you don't know that. You know what I mean? Like, you don't know that Arteta is a big reason behind that, or if he's just a member of Pep's backroom staff. It doesn't mean you're going to be a successful coach, because I've seen that a lot. I've seen that a lot at United over the years. We've had like the likes of Carlos Queiroz, Brian Kidd, Mickey Phelan, Rennie Meulensteen, be assistants. Steve McLaren go from assistants to Alex Ferguson, and a lot of times struggled when they've become their own man. So a lot of people quit to decide that, oh, because he's been Pep's assistant or a part of his coaching staff, that means he'll be guaranteed success. And I don't think it's worked out like that, because it is a bit of the great unknown.
I think for me, and you mentioned the word there a number of times, coach, I think Arteta is a very, very good coach. He was a very good coach at City and clearly played a role in Guardiola's success. But I still have doubts about him as a manager. And Jay, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. This idea of great coaches, Queiroz, McLaren, etc. Without sounding blunt, there's a reason why they're great coaches. There's a reason why maybe they operate so well within that framework, because they become masters of that role. And I think time and again, we all fall into this mistake of thinking that a coach, even a first team coach or a head coach, is the same as a manager. They're two fundamentally different jobs. And for me, Arteta is stuck somewhere between that. In a few years' time, he might become an excellent manager, but Arsenal are not in a position to wait for him to catch up. That'd be my view on him, and it's quite pessimistic, but I think it's realistic based on his return at the club so far. But moving on to wrap up the top 10, Leeds, Jay, all your greatest hits. We've got Liverpool, we've got Leeds having a strong final day to the season. Another win for Marcelo Bielsa's team to wrap it up for 2020-21. 3-1 at home to West Brom, who are obviously already down and dead and buried. And going back to this idea of objectives at the start of the season, Marcelo Bielsa was quite clear, just wanted to stay up. 17th, by hook or by crook, we just want to stay in the Premier League. So by that measurement, Leeds have massively overachieved. 9th, I think in reality he probably had designs on at least a mid-table finish. Assuming that he stays at the club this summer, there's links that he might go elsewhere, but he does seem to be very bedded in at Elland Road. How does he manage expectations now? Because they've finished really, really strongly. They've finished right on the edge of maybe getting into Europe. There'll be a demand now next season to build on this and get them into Europe. But he, being the pragmatist that he is, will say, maybe we're not quite ready.
Yeah, it's a weird one, Lee, isn't it? Because obviously they are a big club and they've just been promoted, but there will be a certain section of that fan base who still believe they should be challenging near the top, and maybe that 9th place finish has encouraged them to feel like that. But we know how difficult the second season can be in the Premier League. You saw it with Sheffield United this season, who, last season were in a very similar position to Leeds, sort of mid to top table, and then just absolutely fell off a cliff this season. A lot depends on obviously Bielsa. If he stays, I think they've got a fighting chance of challenging next season for around the same sort of places, keeping hold of some of the players. I think there's a couple that have been linked with the move, and is it for Rafinha, I think, has been linked, and one or two others as well. So if they can keep hold of the players, keep hold of the manager, then they could build on that. But I think you just have to sort of temper your expectations a little bit, because it is very difficult in the Premier League. There has been that element of surprise with Leeds this season. No one expected them to sort of do as well as they've done. They played that expansive football that Bielsa's famous for, and it's worked for them. And I mean, they concede loads of goals, but they score loads of goals, and it's been this sort of mad, crazy, wonderful adventure. I think next season it will be a little bit more difficult, and they may end up sort of finishing, a little bit lower in the table. But I think if they can consolidate themselves as a Premier League team over the next few years, then start to sort of build and try and move up and look towards qualifying in Europe, then that's pretty decent, because it's so easy to sort of come and spend one or two or even three seasons in the Premier League and then drop out and then struggle to get back in. So if they can get themselves back to being a regular or a consistent Premier League team, then I think that's definite progress and they should be happy with it.
Before we drop down into the bottom half of the table, Matt, Manchester United ended the season with a win, 2-1 away at Wolves, but a much-changed United side as Solskjaer looks to rest certain players ahead of the Europa League final against Villarreal next week. The big story from this really is arguably more focused on Wolves, because Nuno Santo, as we know, has confirmed that he's leaving the club at the end of the season. They're on the hunt for a new manager, and he's on the hunt for a new challenge. And this game almost encapsulated Wolves' season, where there was the opportunity to go out and sign off with a win, and kind of the players give Santo a bit of a show of support against a young and inexperienced Manchester United team. And they just limped over the line. And we come back to the same point with Wolves all the time, that Jota's exit and Jimenez's his horrible injury has massively impacted them. But ultimately, questions need to start being asked. And do you think the Wolves players have let the manager down? And particularly on the last game of the season, they should be playing hard for them. He's been their most successful manager in the history of the Premier League for them. And they do seem to have let him down.
Maybe. I think similarly, as we've said already a few times, you lose a lot of key players. It doesn't really matter who the manager is. It becomes difficult to sort of achieve what you're supposed to achieve. You know, you look at Liverpool, fell off massively from last season because of injuries. Everton, we mentioned, the same. Wolves, again, the same. So regardless of who the manager is, you know, talking about Klopp, Ancelotti, both great managers still couldn't overcome having massive injuries to key players and then missing large parts of the season, because that's just football. At the end of the day, there's players on the pitch. It's not Ancelotti, it's not Nuno on the pitch. And I think it was just a tough, treacherous season for Wolves is what it feels like to me. Every now and then, you just sort of hear, oh, another big injury, another ACL, another six-month injury for them. Unfortunately, Jimenez has cracked his skull. They had the scare with the goalkeeper. All these things, it just felt like a difficult season for Wolves, a club that overachieved regularly since they came up. You know, this is their worst finish in 13th. But 13th place kind of feels right for Wolves in a weird way, doesn't it? They kind of feel like a mid-table team in the Premier League. Yeah, every season since they came up in 2017, 2018, they finished like 6th, 7th, like really good finishes. So I think it's just high expectations and came back down to reality a little bit. I don't think they let Nuno down. I don't think they did. I think they still did quite well. The fans did well for him as well. The fans came in, obviously, the last game of the season, so they were happy to be there. But give him a good send-off, because he's a really good manager and I do like him a lot. I like listening to him speak, and I think he'll get a good job. Maybe even in the Premier League, at a club a bit higher up in the league table, if someone's looking for a manager, might look towards Nuno, because the job that he's done there, although he does have a lot of good players, is really, really impressive.
Looking at United, Jay, we've talked about Aguero's farewell at the Etihad, but there was an absolutely textbook Juan Mata potential farewell in this game. Scored the winner from the penalty spot. Nice passionate celebration in front of the fans. And United have kind of set a deadline of the end of June on whether they're going to give him that 1 year extension that his deal currently has. But Mata is a perfect example of a quiet legend at a club. He's obviously was incredible for Chelsea before he joined United, and despite the fact of not hitting the heights of some United absolute Premier League legends, he's massively, massively found himself a fan club in the fan base, because the way that he carries himself on the field and off the field. And if Mata does leave the club this summer, is that a fitting farewell for him?
Yeah, I think so. I think Juan Mata has been one of our best sort of post Sir Alex Ferguson signings. I know that you could argue there hasn't been a lot of great ones, but you know, he came in at a difficult time, sort of in the January transfer window under Moyes, when we were just sort of really struggling. Got a few goals. He's won a few trophies, and he's always been that sort of figure that, A, when he's on it, he's great to watch. He's a real class act, Juan Mata. And also off the pitch, he's one of those players that, you know, he's always comes across as just a great guy and a good character, and he's incredibly likable. And I think now, if you look at it, he's not played a lot of football this season. I think he's played about 9 Premier League games or something like that. So is he going to play any more than that next season? Probably not. He'll probably play fewer. So it probably is a good time for him to move on. And I think he'll be one of those players that will move on and will be highly respected by Manchester United fans. And I also think that he's still got something to offer as well. I think if he went to Spain or to Italy, I think he could do a good job there. I really do. I think where the pace perhaps isn't quite as fast as it is in the Premier League. We've seen it with players go from Manchester United, go from Premier League, go to play, you know, clubs like Inter and do really well there. So maybe there's a move for him to Spain or Italy. And I wish him well, because, listen, I'm not going to moan if Juan Mata signs an extension, because I love the guy. But I, deep down, I think it is time for him to move on, because I think a player like him should be playing more than sort of 9 league games, whatever it is, a season.
Moving on to the final two games of the season, Fulham 0, Newcastle 2. Matt, obviously Fulham are already down. Newcastle have saved themselves probably in the last month from getting sucked into a relegation battle. And the key factor in that has been Joe Willock. We touched on him before when we were chatting about Arsenal, and he's been incredible for Steve Bruce's side. He's matched Alan Shearer's club record for a 7th successive game with a goal. And obviously, you look at Shearer's record at Newcastle, he's arguably their greatest ever player. Joe Willock is not being mentioned in that conversation, but he is somebody that if Newcastle can secure a permanent deal for him this summer, there's no guarantee that Arsenal will let him go. That'll be a massive step in the right direction. And you feel now with Steve Bruce that he's kind of been given another chance at Newcastle to build what he's always wanted to build at St James's Park.
Yeah, I mean, as for the game specifically, it's a bit of a boring one, I'll be honest with you. Dead rubber, Fulham, as you said, down, Newcastle secure. But while we're doing manager talk and sort of manager review at the end of the season, Steve Bruce got an absolute battering this season for long periods of time. In fact, I came on this podcast multiple times and he got leathered for long periods of time. And to me, he's got up to 12th place now. Don't get me wrong, I know Newcastle fans are not big fans of him, and me saying this isn't going to change that. It's not going to change the reality. He may even still leave at the end of the season because that relationship feels a bit tumultuous. But to then finish 12th above Wolves, who we were saying, you know, Wolves are a good side, normally 7th, 8th place, 6th place, so on and so forth. Above Southampton, who started the season really well, we're getting a lot of praise. You know, got him into 12th place. He deserves a bit of credit for that. He really does. Then they've been nowhere near as bad as they were at the start of the season, and nowhere near as bad as some of the criticism that he got, in my opinion. As for Joe Willock, I mean, we were just talking about Arsenal needing some new players, and what a dream that is for them. He's done so well. He's been unbelievable in the last few games for them, and sort of turned their season around a little bit, nearly single-handedly. As you said, scoring 7 goals in 7 games, an unbelievable thing to do at any club, never mind Newcastle or whatever. So if they can get him, they definitely will. They definitely should go for it. But I don't know if they can. I think Arsenal will want him back, a player of his quality, and that shown what he can do for a young lad as well. I think there's no danger that he goes back to Arsenal at the end, it's the end of the season, so now.
And the final game, which couldn't be more final game on the podcast and final game of the season, Jay. Sheffield United, rock bottom, 1-0 win over Burnley, who've been safe for over a month. This, as a game to round up, is obviously not the most exciting, but Sheffield United's focus now is getting themselves back into the Premier League next season. And whether that is Paul Heckenbottom, who continues as manager, or they bring in someone to replace him, they've got a challenge on their hands. And Rob Blanchard, who comes on the podcast regularly, has been quite firm about Sheffield United, and he said that nobody in that team is good enough to be playing in the Premier League. Nobody will be interested in them. But that, as a kind of motivation for Sheffield United to get themselves back in the Premier League, will work. I'm not saying they're listening to Rob, but those questions will be bounced around about them when they go back to the Championship this summer. And when you look through that squad, do they have Premier League quality, or is Rob right and they're set for another battle and we might not see them back in the Premier League for some time to come?
I mean, I wouldn't look at that squad and go, oh, it's full of potential or full of stars or full of, you know, players that give it another season, another two seasons are going to kick on, or a sort of underachieving or whatever. It is going to be a struggle for them to come back up, and there isn't a lot of players that I see there and I think, oh yeah, you know, Fleck or McGoldrick, they're stars or whatever, they're good players, but they're not great ones. In a perverse way, that might work in their favour though, because Sheffield United can go down, keep pretty much the same team. I don't see that team getting picked apart. I don't see anyone coming in for many of those players, if I'm being brutally honest. And then keep that sort of squad of players who have been playing in the Premier League now for a couple of seasons, go down to the Championship and maybe use that to sort of bounce back up, because you've got that experience, you've been playing at a higher level and you want to get back there. So it could work in their favour. They haven't had a good season at all. There's no sugarcoating it. They've just been pretty awful. Losing as well, getting rid of the manager or whatever went on with the manager there, obviously was just a strange one, and he was an immensely popular figure. Whether they're going to keep Heckenbottom, we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, I don't expect Sheffield United to come back up, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did, if that makes any sense. And I know that's proper fence-sitting, but I just think that they're a team that has struggled, obviously, in the Premier League, have shown in the past they can perform in the Premier League and could go into the Championship and sort of, because of that experience, be too strong for the other Championship teams.
A slight message of positivity to end on, and that brings the podcast to a close and also the 2020-21 Premier League season to an end. It's been a fantastic campaign, and here at the Football Social Daily, we have had an absolute blast. Matt, Jay, thanks so much for your time on the last day.
Thank you, mate. It's been a pleasure.
It's great coming on here and sticking up for Andy Cole.
The Andy Cole podcast, that is something we're going to look into over the summer. Don't forget, we are still here over the summer previewing the start to the new Premier League season, as well as covering the European Championships. So if you click subscribe, you can get a brand new episode when it is ready. Jim, Marley and Niall will be back tomorrow to talk about some of the big, big stories from the final day and look ahead to what is expected to be a fantastic summer of football as Euro 2020 kicks into gear. Thanks so much for listening this season, and we'll see you again very, very soon.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.